And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting today will be Max Cohen and Guy Rowe. In this episode, we're going to discuss the Reading Metropole, which was abandoned at halftime Friday night because of fog. Later on, we will be previewing the upcoming Metropole against Brighton and Hove Albion. However, we're going to start the show by discussing the Chris Martin situation. To help us with this discussion, we have sports journalist from Get West London, Tom Moore, joining us. He was at that match last night and wrote about the match and the Chris Martin situation, which you can read on Get West London. However, before I bring on our guest, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Max, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Russ. Always an honor to be on the show.
Okay, well, look forward to going through this with you. Now, Guy, how are you doing, my friend?
Tired, Russ. Last night was exhausting, but I'm well in myself after I've calmed down a bit. But yeah, it'd be nice to talk about it.
It will be. This is going to be an interesting show. Like I mentioned, we're going to be going through talking about the Chris Martin situation, obviously the match being abandoned, and on top of that, we will be previewing Brighton. Before we do anything, guys, I'm now going to be talking to Tom Moore. I'm going to bring him on in just a second. And we're going to be talking about the match and also talking about the Chris Martin situation. So joining me now is Tom Moore from Get West London. Tom, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well, Tom. Listen, thank you for joining us at the last minute. I look forward to talking to you about all this stuff with Chris Martin. But before we do that, I just want to get your thoughts on the match. Last night, you were there at the Medeski that was abandoned at halftime. And just give me your overall observations of what you watched actually on the pitch, and then we can talk about why the match was abandoned.
Well, I think what I watched on the pitch varied from minute to minute with the fog. I think it sort of kicked off. There was a bit of fog looming in here and there. Wasn't too much. Then it got progressively worse during the first half. And I think with hindsight, if the referee had called it off at sort of half an hour, I think people would have accepted it more. But the thing was, it got to half time and then sort of went down to check when it was a bit like at ground level, just outside the ground and everything. When I got back, it certainly looked to be in the best conditions we'd had since the teams had even come out. So, and then to hear it was abandoned, I mean, when I saw it, the conditions, I thought, okay, we've played in worse. We'll have the second half to look forward to. And then all of a sudden, I just hear on the tannoy, unfortunately, because of the conditions, we have to abandon the match. And then it was like, what? Okay, right. Let's try and get a report up very quickly. So then just went to action stations from a work perspective and trying to get to the bottom of it. And then I tried to get a few players and to talk about it. I'd sort of asked them as they're filing out of the ground, sort of whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, and pretty much the majority of them who offered a response said it was probably the wrong decision. And certainly when I saw the situation at the Medeski, and you can see this photo on my Twitter at about 10 o'clock at night, the fog had completely cleared, so yeah. Could easily have waited about half an hour to see what happened, and we'd have then got the full 90 minutes in, but then obviously everyone's getting back the extra half hour late, although at the same time we do that when it's a League Cup game or an FA Cup replay and it goes through extra time and penalties. So it wouldn't necessarily have been the worst decision to wait a bit, but I think in hindsight, the officials may have erred too much on the side of caution. I mean, player safety, fan safety, and safety of everyone there has to be the absolute paramount thing. And if sure. It was going to be, if it was only going to get worse, I'd fear for all the fans, both Fulham and Reading, travelling home on the motorway or travelling home on the trains and trying to get home. And so it enabled everyone to get home safely. And if there's any positive to take, I think the fact that everyone, to the best of my knowledge, was able to get home safely, I think that's the main thing we can take that's positive.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. What's interesting, Tom, is that I was listening to the match on Fulham FC TV, and they had Sarah Brooks on, director of communications. She came on at halftime and said that the match was abandoned because the linesman could not see across the pitch. And I believe that was the actual reason given. So what are your thoughts about that?
Firstly, I should say that from where I was sat, if you've been to the Majestic Stadium, if you're in the away end last night, if you look to the left and right at the top, I was the person to the right of the first pillar at the top. So if you sort of have a look from that sort of angle, I was right at the top there. So I can't speak for the linesman's view, certainly at pitch side. It may have been a lot worse at the bottom. However, certainly during the first half, there are times where I couldn't see Ali Alhabsi in the Reading goal, although he is at the other end of the pitch to me. But I could certainly make out David Button and the crowd on the far side from my angle. So I'm quite sure there was a certain instance where they couldn't necessarily see the other end of the pitch. But then when you see the fact that Yeovil's game with Portsmouth carried on in seemingly much worse conditions, according to the pictures I've seen on social media, again, I'm not too sure whether that was the right decision. I mean, there probably was a point, but maybe they should have inspected a bit more close at half time and sort of assessed the conditions a bit more. Maybe I think it's easy to say things in hindsight, and I think they did err on the side of caution.
Right.
But I can't speak for the linesmen who are down on the touchline when I'm much up. I can only really say from my view, and certainly speaking to some of the players, they were seem quite content knocking 50, 60-yard balls at times to each other, so they could certainly make each other out. But then I suppose if your visibility is impaired, necessarily, if you've got a tight offside call, you might not be able to make the correct call.
Yeah.
Although, let's face it, even in perfect conditions, they're still making incorrect calls. So everyone's human, but I think maybe, as ridiculous as it sounds, if the game was at Craven Cottage in those conditions, knowing that Reading have a luminous away kit, for instance, and which sort of looks like a fluorescent yellow steward kit, as it were, it maybe the game wouldn't have been abandoned because it would have been easier to see the Reading kit than Fulham's much darker kit. That may be a slight thing that could have made a difference, as it were. So it's all swings and roundabouts. It's a very difficult decision. The officials do have a difficult job, really, in these instances. And I think hindsight probably got it wrong. But certainly, if they'd done it in the first half, I think everyone would have probably said, yeah, it's the right decision.
Okay, very good. Thank you for sharing all that. Tom, I've actually been to the Modeski. I was there in 2012 for that crazy 3-3 draw. I was there.
Oh,
for
yeah,
that.
So I was there as well.
I've been there. It's actually, you know, for me, I actually enjoyed the stadium. I know it's a more modern stadium, but I actually enjoyed being there. Mm. So that stadium actually has a good thought in my mind. But again, seeing the pictures that everyone was sharing, I was like, oh boy, this is bad. But then, of course, I kept hearing that it was clearing up, and then they called the match, which was disappointing. All right, Tom, let's now get in and let's talk about this Chris Martin situation. I recommend everyone going to Get West London to read your article. It's an opinion piece, but it's very interesting. And the title is, Slavisa Jokanović faces his biggest test as foggy conditions cause abandonment plus other talking points. And let's get right into this. Let's talk about the Martin conundrum that you wrote about. I'm going to break this up into pieces. I'm just going to read excerpts from your article. This is right from your article, Tom. So this is Jokanović, his first real crisis to deal with as Fulham boss, as he, along with the club's board, decide what to do about Chris Martin. The Serbian was adamant after the game that the striker was not going to play for Derby this season. And here's a quote from Slavisa: Fulham is not a train station. This may have been something said in the heat of the moment. This is, again, from your article. If I was Jokanović, I would feel betrayed after giving someone a chance when they have been cast aside elsewhere to be repaid in this way. And then you go in talking about the situation with Nigel Pearson, and then you say, I can completely understand his logic in providing the powers that be back, and he could let Martin rot in the reserves for the rest of the season. That comes with its own risk, as keeping a player who has no intention of playing for the club can disrupt those that are happy to be there. Okay, so let's just talk about the overall Martin situation and what you wrote about in the beginning of your article.
I've actually dealt with a similar story about this earlier in January 2016, where James Tarkowski did a similar thing at Brentford because he wanted to go to Burnley, and I've drawn on those experiences from then, sort of how that all ended up playing out. Is he then issued a statement apologising and then ended up on transfer deadline day joining Burnley. I think the fact that Nigel Pearson didn't rate him at all when he took over there, and the fact he was willing to loan him out, suggests that Djukanovic was happy to give him a chance. He'd not had necessarily the best of seasons last year with the Rams, and I think the fact that he had a strong start to the season, and then a manager he liked, and Steve McClaren's back there, and what he was saying ahead of the Fulham derby game earlier this season, shows how much the former England man rates him. And I think for me, it leaves a very bitter taste in the mouth that someone is willing just to go, no, I don't want to play for you anymore. I want to go home. It's almost, if you liken it to something where you're playing out in the streets, the person whose ball it is doesn't like the fact that they're not on a team with their mates or something like that, they pick the ball up and go home. I really don't like it when a player does such a thing. And for me, it's the ultimate insult to a football club and supporters to refuse to play. And it's a very tough one, really. I mean, I'm quite sure the vindictive side of me would say, let him rot. Don't send him back to Derby. But then you can't just think about one person. You've got to look at the bigger picture. And this is where I think these things can be said in the heat of the moment. You've had a game abandoned. You've had someone say they don't want to play or pull out with an injury that the medical staff say is fine. So you're frustrated. You're angry. So you can sometimes say these things that you would rather in future toned down, as it were, but I can certainly understand the anger that Djukanovic is feeling, and I'm quite sure there'd be Fulham fans thinking, yes, let him rot. But then you've also got to think of the wider squad, the 18 players that were involved in last night's game. Does having someone like that negatively impact on those 18? And you can look at it from financial reason. If Fulham can get either half the money back or the money back that they paid to take Martin on loan, then it makes good sense from a business point of view. But also, if the players don't want him around, then you're also better off casting him aside and letting him go back, and then focus on the players that do actually care about being at the club and are happy at the club. So it's a very difficult decision. And it's almost, from certain people's perspective, you can't do right for doing wrong. But I think in the end, I think he'll end up going back to Derby. And I would say it would probably be the right decision for the reasons laid out. And the fact it's more important to focus on the 18, 20, 25 players at the club. And if you can get a replacement in January, then it makes no difference. So long, farewell, and maybe insert a clause that means he can't play for Derby against Fulham, and that would certainly put the cat amongst the pigeons. But I'm quite sure, I mean, for the way Djukanovic has treated him in the past, and because when Martin wasn't necessarily having the best of times, he always stood by him, he always backed him, to then have it thrown back in your face just a few months later, if I was in his position, I'd be absolutely livid, and I would feel betrayed if I was in that position.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And I'm going to go right back to you, because I was thinking about this while you were talking about it. And it's something that Djukanovic said in his head coach reaction. I don't have it right in front of me, but he was talking about why would I allow him to go back to make Derby stronger? And I agree with that. And, you know, again, they are a direct competitor, Tom. So this is more difficult, I think, than just, you know, I'll send them back. You are helping a major competitor that could be the difference between you and Darby getting into the top six. So that's something that he has to consider as well.
Oh, yeah, it is something you have to consider. And it makes it a tough decision if refer back to the Tarkowski instance. Burnley are obviously going for automatic promotion and Brentford weren't going to do anything. So it didn't make that sort of direct competitor, although it was in the same division. But certainly both Fulham and Derby have a chance of reaching the playoffs at the end of the season. So would Chris Martin's goals make the difference? Quite possibly. Would for both teams, it is quite possible. I mean, if Fulham could get Jordan Rhodes, who I probably see as a better championship striker, as in my opinion, I would probably say send him back. But when you've got Derby on 39 points, Fulham 36, Sheffield Wednesday in sixth on 40, you don't want to just let someone who's one place, 3 points above, don't want them to necessarily benefit. So there is that to it. But again, going back to what I said, is him helping, his presence may hinder the likes of Lucas Pearson or Matt Smith or other players at the club. And having someone, when you do that, there's always a toxic element. I mean, I would ask Fulham fans, would they be happy, for instance, if he lined up against Brighton on Monday afternoon? If it was me, I probably wouldn't be happy to see someone like that, because if they're prepared to down tools and not play, would they then just underperform in order to get the move they want? I mean, it's a very difficult situation, and there's so many permutations that have to be considered.
So, man, I agree with you. That's why there's no cut and dry. This is what they need to do. They have so many factors in this. I'm talking about Fulham. And I keep going back to this, Tom. You know, and when Slavica first came and they were dealing with the Ross McCormack situation, the Moussa Dembele situation, and that was difficult in itself. I don't believe either player said that they weren't going to play for the club. So there is a difference there, but there was some tension there. And I thought Jokanović and Fulham handled that fairly well, and in the end, they both stayed through through the January transfer window. So they, you know, for me, they were putting Fulham first. I think that Fulham need to put themselves first, and like you mentioned Jordan Rhodes. It doesn't have to be Jordan Rhodes, but it would have to be someone that is a comparable striker to mine, or maybe even better. Before I would consider it, they need to put Fulham first. Do you understand where I'm coming from on that?
Oh, absolutely, and that's what the club will do. They will put the best interests of Fulham Football Club first, ignoring what Chris Martin or Derby County Football Club want. I mean, I think if we look back at last January, I think to me the reason why Fulham weren't prepared to make any sales, I think if they could have, say, sold Moussa Dembele but had him back on loan for the rest of the season, they would have done. But we've also got to remember that at that time, Fulham were under a transfer embargo. So even if they sold both McCormack and Dembele, they might make 20, 25 million on them. But if they can't spend that money, where are the goals going to come from? So that was part of the reason why.
It was a tough situation too.
That was the reason why Fulham sort of put themselves first. And they probably said to Ross McCormack and certainly with Moussa Dembele and his contractual situation, they probably said to Ross McCormack, "Look, stick with us. We'll give you a new contract. We'll boost your pay. And then if the suitable offer comes in the summer, we'll let you go." And obviously that is what happened. And obviously Moussa Dembele was happy to run down his contracts and sign for Celtic. I think Fulham put themselves first. They could have, if Shahid Khan was wanting to take a financial view, he could easily have taken 20, 25 million, but then he'd also be risking Fulham dropping into that bottom three, although they probably would have had enough to stay up. You don't want to take that sort of gamble by allowing your two main sources of goals to leave the club. I mean, fortunately, if we look at sort of the Fulham goal scorers, I mean, Martin is a key component of it, but you've also got Tom Kearney and other players that can fill the void for him. And I would say Martin is very much replaceable in this window, and if a deal can come in, that would be the way to go about it. But when you've got Tom Kearney, you've got Sonny Aluko, you've got Floyd Ayite, Lucas Pearson, you've got players that can all score goals, and even Matt Smith, who's not had much of a look in, he could also get a chance again to play. I think there's certainly options, but I think Fulham have to make sure that they are in a better position come February the 1st than they are today before coming to a final decision on whether Chris Martin stays or goes.
See, I totally agree with that. And that's what I hope is going to be how they handle this. They got to take care of their own business. Like I said, put Fulham first. And then if they do that, then they can deal with the Chris Martin situation the way they want to handle it. Again, it's on them. Like you said, players, in the end, I was reading your article, very interesting article, players in the end tend to get their way. But this situation has so many variables with it that it's just not cut and dry. And that's going to lead me to now talk about, you wrote about the test of the loan system. And I'm just going to read a little excerpt from that because I found it interesting. Again, let's just mention, this is your opinion, what I'm about to read. Mm-hmm. And then you can comment on it. This is just your opinion. Quote, this is from you, your article. Martin's apparent eagerness to return to Derby suggests that the Rams may have promised him a new contract, but to earn it, he has to force through a return. Now, this is just your opinion, but talk about this, because that kind of makes sense that maybe, you don't know, but maybe this is what's going on here.
Yeah, I think you, if you look at sort of in a very simple way, is in the summer you had Nigel Pearson in charge at Derby, didn't rate Chris Martin, allowed him to leave on loan. You've got Steve McLaren coming in to replace Pearson after his departure, who does rate Martin, does like Martin, and felt the decision to let Martin leave was strange, and that was his sort of words he used sort of in an interview ahead of that Fulham Derby game. So reading between the lines of his interview ahead of that game, there was a sense that he felt Derby would be keen to have him back. And I think the way they would probably do that is either offer him a new contract or say your family's not settled, you don't want to be commuting up to the Midlands to see your family. And we've got to remember in all this is footballers are human. They do have families. They are away from their families a lot, especially at this time of year. And a lot of the footballers, in a way, would rather be, let's face it, it's Christmas time. You want to be with your family. You don't necessarily want to be with your colleagues, as it were, just to put it in a very layman terms type thing. So I could easily see, just through looking at it very methodically and logically, that this is sort of, and this is the way clubs work, is this is possibly how they've tried to do it. Because at the end of the day, Derby don't have a recall clause that they can say, right, he's coming back, you can't do anything about it. Fulham have to give that green light.
Correct.
So that is why you could possibly see maybe a representative has advised him that this may be the way to go, because normally in most situations when a player downs tools, they tend to get what they want.
Sure.
So this is probably where I see the situation coming from, because you've got a number of parameters in there that have changed since they were in the summer. And there's certainly been talk about it, certainly in the local Derby media, pretty much since, say, October time, about a possible return for him. So it's something that's it's sort of been bubbling under the surface of it, but now it's quite clearly come to the boil, and it's all kicked off now.
No, definitely. And like I said, what you're doing here, this is your opinion. You're just reading the tea leaves. You're trying to figure out what is driving this, and you're just throwing it out there that maybe there's something going on here. Maybe there's a new contract offer for him. You're just saying it. You don't know, but you're just throwing it out there. And because that who knows? You know, that could be what's going on here. We just don't know. All right, my friend. Before I let you go, just let's finish off talking about the options for Fulham. You've pretty much been talking about it, and you wrote about this so quickly. Let's talk about where this can go from Fulham's perspective?
I think it goes one of several ways. I think maybe the optimum solution is Chris Martin comes out, apologises to the supporters, to his teammates, accepts it, he accepts that he's staying there for the rest of the season, and it all carries on as normal. I think that's sort of maybe in an ideal world that is what would happen. However, I think the chances of that are quite slim. You've then got the other option where Slavisa Djukanovic finds a replacement, says to Chris Martin, right, you train with the reserves, you're not wanted with my team, you train with the kids, and we're forgetting about you. And then you've got a player there who's out the way, and you've found a replacement, and Fulham punish Derby or punish a representative for their actions, or three, as I've said before, is Fulham get a replacement that they feel is just as good or if not better, try and negotiate a sort of rebate on the fee they paid for his line move and let him go that way. I think I can't see Fulham just saying, right, Chris, we'll let you go back to Derby, see you later. I don't think that could happen. I think if say Chris Martin had come on loan from Sevilla, for instance,
right,
and he wanted to go back to Spain, or his family hadn't settled, or if it was someone like that, come from the continent or America or somewhere, and he went to the club and said, look, I'm not happy in London. I want to go back to my home country. I would say Fulham would probably take the pastoral care side, even if it wasn't necessarily the best thing for the club to do. They would probably have said, okay, we will let you go back. We understand your situation. We're happy for you to go back as long as you perform and give your all between now and the transfer window opening. You go with our blessings. And I could see if it was that situation, I think Fulham would have put the player and their pastoral care first, because at the end of the day, Fulham are a club that do care about their employees, care about their players, and they wouldn't want someone who had, say, issues and they needed to return to their homeland in order to resolve them. I think they'd put the player first in that instance, because that gets made clear to the squad, and the squad actually know that the club cares about them as people rather than just a pawn to buy and sell as they please, as it were.
Okay, very good. One last thing, you know, again, while we're talking about this, I'm thinking about this, you know, and again, we all have jobs. What would be the reaction to your employer if you said, you know what, I'm not going to work today, you know? And I think that's a factor here. That's the thing about this. I understand, you know, listen, family issues. I certainly understand. I do. I understand. Yeah. Everyone has families. We all understand this. But I would still go to work, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, I would still go to work. That's the part that I can't get over in regards to Chris Martin. I understand that maybe this is a ploy to push a move. But I wouldn't. Yeah. I was not brought up to not work.
Yeah, I think if I said to my boss, I'm not working today, he'd probably turn around and say, we're not working tomorrow either. Here's your P45 and goodbye. That's pretty much how, certainly if I was the boss, that is how I'd react. However, the problem with that is if in that normal situation, but if that happened, Chris Martin would take his P45, leaving papers, and go off up the road to Derby, and he's won. I mean, that's certainly in a normal profession, if I behaved in that way, I would certainly expect to not be working for that company any longer. And so I think the only time I can ever say I'd quite like to take that day off is if I've worked the 7 days before it and said, can I have tomorrow off as I've worked the past week?
Right.
And in that instance, they'll probably say, yes, you can. But it's not, I'm just downing tools today. I think that's the thing. And this is where it gets complicated, because if he was a player contracted to Fulham, you could sack him. I'm not entirely sure what disciplinary measures Fulham can take against him. I don't, because I must say, I don't know how much of his wages Fulham are paying. And I'm not entirely sure whether Fulham are able to fine him a week's wages, 2 weeks' wages, or what have you. I mean, that's possibly the only thing they can do is fine him a week's wage or something. And that may be the only course of action they can take. But it's certainly a very difficult issue, and it's one that's probably going to run until the 1st of February 2017. And it's one that is going to be the sort of undercurrent to Fulham's January business, I'd say, and as it was from remembering covering Brentford and that situation, it was certainly the thing that the fans are most interested in, is what's happening with this. Now it's all come to a head. What's the reaction? What are you doing now? Is he eligible to play? Is he not eligible to play? I mean, could we see Chris Martin line up on Monday against Brighton? I would doubt it, and if he does, I reckon I reckon Craven Cottage might let him know what they think of him in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. This whole situation is difficult, and it's funny because Fulham are coming off, you know, again ending the season fairly strong, and then we have this situation in January, which again makes things difficult for the club, and we'll see how they respond. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today on such short notice. You were fantastic. Please tell everyone how they can find you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Tom Moore Journo, or find me on Facebook. My journalist Facebook page is just Tom Moore, and you should be able to find me on those two forms. And I can keep you all updated as to what I find out as I run around West London trying to keep everyone up to date as what's going on in the football world around here.
Oh, well, listen, I certainly appreciate it. I'm sure the Fulham supporters appreciate you trying to get the information for us. So thank you so much, Tom, for joining
Not
us.
A problem.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone who's listening. And I hope 2017 brings everyone what they wish for in their lives, be it a new job or new anything or just the little things. And I hope 2017 gives us that sort of year.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Tom, thank you very much for joining us, and we will be
Not
in touch,
problem.
My friend. Have a great day.
Thank you, and you. Take care.
Take care. Okay, that was Tom Moore, who is a sports journalist for Get West London. He was joining us for a good amount of time to talk about the Chris Martin situation and also to talk about the match that was abandoned Friday night at the Medeski for Fulham. So we have much to discuss. Got my co-host back on the line with us. Max, I'm going to start with you. Just an overall view of what you listened to with that interview with Tom Moore.
Yeah, spot on. I have to say that just going back to the decision to abandon the match, it was obviously pretty shocking for the huge number of Fulham supporters that traveled away. And it was really disappointing for the fact that this is the best, one of the best, if not the best, away following Fulham have had in quite some time. We brought probably 3,000 or 4,000 fans out on a Friday night in a frigid atmosphere. And we were in great voice, and the match was unfortunately cancelled. There was moments, probably half an hour and 50 minutes in, where in the away end sat, you could not see a thing. Fulham were attacking on the far end. And there were a couple of times that Ryan Fredericks was in the box at that cross, and the ball went in, and for a split second, you had no idea what was going on because the fog was so thick. So at that point in time, I'd say probably wouldn't have been too many complaints if they had called the match off. But the fact that they'd braved through that tough period and gone to halftime, and while it was evident to everyone in all 24,000 people there that it was clearing, to call it off was just very disappointing for everyone. A lot of the Fulham fans in the away concourses after the match is abandoned, a bit of rowdiness, and they're completely entitled to the decision. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Guy, over to you. Thoughts on what we talked about with Tom Moore, and just overall, if you want to share your thoughts on Chris Martin or on the match being abandoned, we're going to get into it in a little bit.
Yeah.
Wow, what's going on there?
Oh, I live by a motorway. There's always, you know, police cars or ambulances and stuff like that. The Met Police are always busy here in London. With the match and with the interview with Tom, felt like it was very much from a journalist perspective. Obviously, thinking, you know, about his article and all of that type of stuff, I hadn't had the chance to read it, but Chris Martin, at least personally, my position is fixed. You know, if we are not a bloody train station, and you know, if he wants to leave, then so be it. But you know, I wouldn't be against him leaving, but it is all about how it impacts the team, really. You know, no player is bigger than the club. We've seen it so many times with Ross McCormack, Moussa Dembélé, Patrick Roberts, all of that type of stuff. And I feel like if it's the best decision moving forward, then fine, let him go. But at the same time, I want him to stay just based off of how big of a player, at least in my opinion, he's become. And but having said that, he's not irreplaceable.
Right.
You know, he's not undroppable. We do have players that can fill his position, that can chip in with other goals, as we've seen. You know, before we even got Martin, Matt Smith was doing well. And it just feels like a lot of stress going into an already stressful period of the season.
Totally.
You know, matches, racking on matches around Christmas, and then the January transfer window is a whole other story. But as far as I'm concerned, we'll see what happens, really. You know, the club never really keep their... They never really release details to the public about transfers or anything like that. And I guess all us fans can do is, you know, wait and see. About the match, we, you know, I'm just going to come straight out and say, you know me, love a good sing song, love getting my hair covered in beer, you know, all of that type of stuff. So at halftime, I didn't come back out and see the pitch. I didn't come back out and see the weather. You know, I was too busy singing. And the funny thing is, I missed the best of it because I was meeting my best mate, and I was just in an awkward like position in the middle, while everyone else was singing and dancing outside of the block I was sat in. And I'd moved to the far end just to meet my mate. But oh well. The match.
It was great stuff in the concourse. I actually have a video on my Twitter of just having thrown the beer and I don't want to go home. It really made up for the match being abandoned. I was really bad mood, but honestly, it almost made up for it. It was good, that, good stuff.
Yeah, it's like it's not like I haven't done it before. You know, I'll get to do it again. Hopefully, you know, the rearranged match.
Yeah,
whenever it may be. I'm not taking no for an answer. I'm definitely going with that. But you know, I don't want to waste money.
I hear you, guy.
I'm just reminding myself of what it said on the back of the ticket. If a match is abandoned before kickoff, fans are entitled to free readmission and all of that type of stuff. And if a match is abandoned after kickoff, fans are entitled to half price readmission. So I don't know if the club's going to do anything about that or if we're going to pay half price.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that, my friend. All right, Max.
It definitely pissed me off. We bought our biggest away attendance of the season, and the match gets bloody called off. It's typical, really.
I hear you, my friend. We're going to talk a little bit about the match in just a second. I do want to go back to you, Max, I just want to talk briefly a little bit more about Chris Martin. I want to get your view. Guy's already mentioned his view, and I just want to read something to you. This is from the head coach reaction, because I want to get your thoughts on this is what Savisa had to say about it after the match. This is about Chris Martin, the situation. Quote, he stopped in training, but I have information from medical staff that he's available to play. He decided to take a day off. We need to check the situation, but I don't have any intention of making our rivals any stronger. I'm not going to send him back to Derby. He's going to stay with us, and he's going to respect the contract. We are not a train station. I love that line. You can't come in and out when you want. We need to respect ourselves. And I don't know if he's going to play for Fulham, but he's not going to play for Derby. We are London's oldest club. We need to be treated with respect. Okay. What do you make of those quotes from Savisa? And then overall, your thoughts about the Martin situation?
First of all, I think he should really be it's a disgrace what he's done, because you're under contract, and to sit at a match, I think you guys are mentioning it before, it's your job.
Yeah,
you know, it's your job is to play football, and if you don't show up to work, you should be ashamed of yourself, because he's let down all the supporters, he's let down his fellow teammates, and he's let down the head coach who took him in. That being said, you could see in the 45 minutes that were played last night how much we did miss him, in that we had Aite and Aluko kind of swapping, being up top. And when you kind of build a squad on a target, have a very small, quick player up top who couldn't quite hold up the ball as well, you saw that our attack was pretty abysmal.
He's the central hub. Anyway.
Yeah,
he's the central hub of everything, focal point.
Yeah, which kind of, wouldn't go this, but almost a Bobby Zamora figure when he was at Fulham. The target man holds up play and really makes everyone around him seem better by taking the central defenders, bringing them towards him. That being said, I'd love to see him just not go back to Derby and rot in the reserves, and Slavisa teach him a lesson, because he's really let down the club, and it's kind of disgraceful in my opinion.
Yeah.
The thing that Fulham must not let him leave to Derby, because as Evan said, they're 3 points ahead of us, 1 point ahead of us on the table.
That's right. That's right. And that's my point, Max. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I want to really get back to this. Why would you want to make Derby stronger? You make Derby stronger by sending him back. You are in direct competition with them right now to get in the top six. That's the point that I can't get my head around, why you would send him back. I understand everything else that goes around with it, but you wouldn't want to make your competitor better, and you would be doing that by sending him back. So that's why this situation is very difficult. Like Tom was mentioning, if it's Sevilla, it's a different situation, but it's a direct competitor. How can you send him back?
Exactly. I completely agree. But I'd just like to take a moment to consider how odd the situation is, because I was at the Ipswich match.
Yep.
He scored a great goal. And when Sigurdsson scored, I think everyone's seen this kind of brilliant picture of him lifting up Ragnar Sigurdsson in celebration. That's not a player who was unhappy at the club. I don't know how much
that's what I don't understand.
It's very odd for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the interviews, he's all happy and everything. I did the Q&A with Tom Kearney. He was loving it.
Yeah, he
looked really happy at the club.
Yeah, and I want to mention that I heard an interview with him at halftime of the Derby County match, and he did not sound like a player that was looking to go back. He sounded like a player, you know, again, I'm just reading between the lines here, listening to the interview. He did not sound like a player that was unhappy at Fulham, that was looking to get back. It did not come over that way.
And it's also not as if Fulham have lost five in a row, we're in a relegation dogfight, we're not in contention, we're 4 points off the playoff places. Why would he want to leave for a club that's better off but barely? It's not as if we're languishing in the bottom half.
No.
It just seems very odd to me.
It's a difficult situation. There are a lot of layers to it, and we're just going to have to follow and see how it goes. And the reports are that what's driving this are family issues. And I certainly can understand that. I can. But I also understand that if you have a job and you're paid to do it, you do it. You do it. You do the job. So that's why this situation is extremely difficult. But guys, before we talk about the Brighton match, I definitely just want your overall view. We talked about it a little bit, but Guy, I want to talk to you a little bit about the actual match itself being abandoned, but let's talk about, you know, about what you could see and what you couldn't see, what you saw from Fulham, because, you know, I went and I checked the stats, and the stats do favor us with possession. I believe when we only had one shot, We didn't have that many shots, but we definitely had more possession. What did you see from this match? Did you feel that Fulham could get something out of this match at halftime?
Yeah. So I had a pretty decent view, kind of the middle of the stand. Good view. And the fog, I could see a lot. But I remember there was a few instances where we had the big score screen to our right, and they would sometimes show what was going on on the screen, and you know, there were times where the camera couldn't even pick it up, and we couldn't even see what was going on the screen. There was at least the one time I remember we had a free kick, and it was at the far corner. It was near the corner flag, and I literally couldn't see. I knew there was two players there, but I couldn't see who took it. You know, again, like Tom said, there were times where you couldn't see Ali Alhaji. I remember something. I think Aluko played in a low ball, and then Ayite had a scramble with Alhaji. I couldn't make that out or how it happened. Just overall play and the match itself, I felt like we were getting a hold of it. I felt like we were very tight towards, you know, the half hour mark. And, as the fog got worse, I don't know if that played a part in how we played or not. I'd imagine so. I feel like, we loosened up a bit towards the end of the first half. And there were a few times where we gave the ball away in poor positions and Reading attacked us with ease. Definitely remember one pass that just nutmegged Ryan Fredericks and took him and Tim Ream out of the game. I feel like we were getting a hold of it, definitely. Okay. And they managed to pull that shot off at halftime or at the end of the half. And after that, Callum Harriott came off. Paul McShane put out a tweet saying that he did so well in 30 seconds that he made Fulham call the game off or whatever. And at least my friend who was at the game as well said that Paul McShane was having words with the officials and that Tom Kearney wasn't coming over or something like that. And I didn't see the pitch after half time, so I didn't know what happened with the players. But at least from the impression I'm getting, Fulham came out like they wanted to play, and either Reading or the officials just didn't want it or weren't prepared to see how it went. And I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently the referee didn't even come out the tunnel.
Interesting. Very interesting. Max, over to you. I want to get your view of what you watched. I'm glad that Guy already brought this up because I'm listening to the match, and it sounds like that David Button was tested a few times. But it also seemed like, again, listening to the match, and I haven't seen anything, that Fulham obviously had the better amount of possession. I'm not saying quality possession, had a better amount of possession. So did you feel that half, that if the match continued, that Fulham would get something out of this match?
Well, that's a good question, but I just want to touch on what you said earlier. I think that's an important distinction because they might have had the more possession, but it wasn't necessarily more quality possession. It was kind of classic Fulham that I've seen over the past couple of weeks in which we've dominated the play, but I can't really name one chance we had to speak of. Of course, Reading had that glorious opportunity probably 15 minutes in on their chips through. I think it was McCleary, and he's one-on-one with Button. And credit to Button, he's had a tough time from the Fulham fans over the past couple of months, but he made a class save when McCleary's clear through to keep it 0-0. Reading did look threatening, and one thing I think they did do that was different from Ipswich was they really pressed Fulham a lot higher than Ipswich did, which meant that they couldn't really play out the back like they're used to. Always Kearney, Piazon, whenever they received the ball from midfield, always had a Reading player on their back, could never turn, always had to play it back. Some nervy moments where Ream and Malone had to clear, almost lost the ball in dangerous situations. So it definitely wasn't I wouldn't say Fulham were dominating. I wouldn't say it looked like they were likely to win. But once they got to 0-0 at halftime, I think it just could have grown to the match and maybe nicked a winner late on. But, you know, no one knows. And just back to the point about match getting cancelled, really ruined a lot of people's nights. I remember one guy I met at the train station, Reading train station. This has ruined my New Year's now. Just so disappointed. So you never know.
I felt so sorry for you, Max. Seeing as you're over here on holiday, I'm guessing. And you're probably not going to be here for the rearrange match.
I was really disappointed. I'm actually leaving on the 2nd. So
are you going to be here for the Brighton match?
I'm not, no.
No? Oh, you didn't even get to go to the cottage then. Wow.
I know. I saw Ipswich and Reading away, but no home matches this time. So a bit disappointing.
That's too bad, Max. That's too bad. That's too bad. Guys, real quickly, I'm just going to give you the stats for the match and just curious what you think of them. Here are the stats, and then we'll go into our preview of the Brighton match. Possession, 61-39% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, Fulham only had one. Reading had six. Shots on target, 3 for Reading. Then we go to corners, 2-1 in favor of Reading. Crosses, 12-7 in favor of Fulham. Tackles, 9-3 in favor of Reading. Attempted passes, 245-157 in favor of Fulham. This is always a good stat. Attacking passes, 98-52 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 75%-66% in favor of Fulham. Accurate passes, 185-104 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, 11-7 in favor of Reading. And fouls, 7-4 Reading and 4 for Fulham. Quickly, Max, what stands out to you from the halftime stats of a match that was abandoned?
I think the most striking is probably shots. Reading, 6 shots to end target. I definitely say they were the more threatening.
Okay. They had 6 shots and 3 were on target. How about you, Guy?
Yeah, the shots and shots on target, they stand out as well as the possession, at least because it was typical for them in the way that we controlled the possession. Obviously, I wouldn't say we had but what we did with our possession was the best, but you know, we do always tend to have most possession wherever we play. At least with the shots for Reading, it's a credit to David Button, really. I reckon he would have had his best game for us if that had gone the full 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, he made that massive save on Gareth McCleary, you know, off his hand and rolled round the far post. At the end of the first half, you know, big save. A lot of fans thought that was going in. Yeah, no, credit to David Button. You know, I'm a Better Nelly fanboy, but... But, you know, you got to give credit where it's due, especially when it looks like Benelli isn't going to get a game anytime soon.
Okay. Hey, goodbye you. Goodbye you, Guy, because you are a Benelli guy. So goodbye you for saying that. I actually appreciate the honesty there, my friend. All right. Let's now get into this match on Monday. Very interesting. Fulham play Brighton Hove Albion at Craven Cottage. And I'm just going to share some information with you guys. To start off our preview here, let's start with Brighton are in the table. They are currently second. They have 15 victories, 6 draws, 2 losses. They've scored 38. They've only given up 14, plus 24 goal differential, and they're on 51 points. Here's what WhoScored.com says about them, just some characteristic strengths. Finishing scoring chances, aerial duels, defending set pieces, and protecting lead, they're all strong. The only weakness that they list is avoiding offside, very weak. Style play, attacking down the left. Opponents play aggressive against them. Their goals are led by Glenn Murray with 15. Anthony Knockhart has 8. Sam Baldock has 6. And Glenn Murray and Sam Baldock, I believe, were the goal scorers against Fulham the first time. They generally play a 4-4-2. Their goalkeeper, someone we all know, David Stockdale. You also might see Steve Sidwell in central midfield. You know, players to look out for. I've already named them Glenn Murray and Sam Baldock. Those are two players to really look out for. And also, Anthony Knockhart is a dangerous player as well. All right, Max, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to give you this. Who are your key players on Monday for Fulham against Brighton Hove Albion? Who has to have a good match for them to win this match?
I think the center backs have to be immense. I think Ream and Maddle, they really impressed me away at Ipswich. And, you know, with that, obviously, you mentioned very potent Brighton attack. They're going to have to be brilliant. As well as Johansson McDonald. who had been on great form.
Right in the center. You're going right up the spine, right up the center.
Yeah, right up the spine of the team. And, of course, the big question mark is up top. If Martin does not play, Ayite and Aluka really have to step up for me.
Okay.
As well as Piazon, who didn't really impress me in the 45 minutes last night. Seemed a bit on the peripheries of the match, on the fringes. He needs to get stuck in if he wants to make up for the absence of Martin. It's going to be a tough match, no doubt about it. But Fulham have shown, when we play the big boys at home, I mean, all I have to do is look at the Reading and Huddersfield match and the Derby match. We do well. We do well. And Newcastle, of course. So it's going to be a tough place to come, Craven Cottage, for the Championship High Flyers. But I reckon we can get 3 points.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you mentioned the whole situation with Chris Martin, because that is something that Savisa is going to have to figure out how to make up for that loss, because he does have that, you know, basically everything can play off of him. So he's going to have to figure out how that's all going to work. I'm glad that you brought up Ayite and Aluko, because they probably have to step up and have very good matches. All right, Guy, over to you. Your opinion. How do Fulham win this match? What do they need to do to beat Brighton Hove Albion at Craven Cottage? What would be your strategy if you were Savisa?
Pull off the same kind of performance that we did at the MX. No, we dominated them away. You'd think it would be more simple to do it at home, but our away record's been better this season. Again, like Max said, we have blasted the big boys off the park, you know, at the top of the table at the Cottage, you know, Reading 5-0, Huddersfield 5-0, Derby, we drew, but that was flattering in my opinion. we can give these teams tough challenges. Even last season, we were given the top six good games. Whether or not we lost them was down to our defence, but no, we would always give the top six and those type of teams good games last season. And this year it's no different, especially now that we're kind of dark horses in the playoff push. If we can just perform like we did at the MX, perform consistently, which I feel we have been doing, then we should be able to do our thing and get a result. Especially because, if I remember rightly, the game at the Amex was one of those games that Chris Martin went missing. You know, a lot of our play was through the midfield, and Chris Martin wasn't doing much at all.
Where I see the key to this match. I'm glad that you brought up the midfield. I'm sorry to break in. Yeah. I think that they can take advantage of their midfield with our midfield. You know, nothing against Steve Sidwell. I think he can be taken advantage of.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it shows how strong our squad is when we don't need to rely on one player up top. You know, our goals have been scattered through midfield.
That's right.
And, you know, last year, Dembele and McCormack, without them, we'd have gone down. This year, you know, I would say I'm not bothered about Martin leaving, but I know that if he does leave, then it's not the end of the world. You know, I would argue that's more incentive to go out and get a striker like Jordan Rhodes or something like that. You know, our most important players definitely in the midfield. You know, the usual suspects: Kenny, yeah, McDonald, Johansson. It'd be nice to see, you know, Aluko and Ayite, I'm guessing, switching on the wings. A few people I know would be arguing for Matt Smith to get a game. But it seems like it would be Ayite and Aluko. Do our thing. You know, we gave him a good game. We made a good account of ourselves at the Amex. We should be more than capable of doing it again on Monday.
See, I totally agree with that. And I think this is a match they can win, with or without Chris Martin. And the first match at Brighton proves that they can beat this team. This is a tough team. This is a team that doesn't beat themselves. This is a team that makes you beat them. And that makes them a difficult team to play. But if you play your game, you can beat this team. I truly believe that. I truly believe that Brighton are just built to take advantage of your mistakes. If you make a mistake, they're going to hurt you. But if you can play a pretty flawless game, you can beat them. I truly believe that, guys. Max, over to you.
And Murray in that much space again.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. They have to, you know, I'm talking about all starting 11, all 11 on the pitch have to make sure they're doing their jobs. If one person is not doing their job to their capability, they can hurt you. Like you just said, giving up too much space to Glenn Murray. You can't do that. Or he is going to hurt you. And they all got to be on the same page in this one. All right. Guys, since you were just talking, I'll go to you first then. give me your starting 11 on Monday for Fulham.
Okay. Again, Benedetti fanboy, but credit to Button. Credit to Button. I would start Button just off of that half. You know, I feel like he showed some good things in that first half. If he can carry that on into the Brighton game, I'll be behind him. But Button in goal. Fredericks and Malone usually, or maybe Odoi. I don't know, because Odoi did well, or at least I thought he did well at the Amex. I just remember he got suspended in that game, but you know, Fredericks with Odoi / Malone on his fullbacks. Ream and Maddle, I feel like, you know, they Ream impressed me at Ipswich. They had some trouble at Reading, I would say, but usual midfield: McDonald, Johansson, Kenny, Aluko, Aite, and we will have to see about the striker. Personally, okay. I would play Matt Smith.
Okay.
Personally, yep.
Okay, you wouldn't play Piazon in this match.
Maybe off the bench, but he didn't impress me in that first half. And at Ipswich, when he came on, he looked good, but I think it is about time, because Matt Smith was doing well before we got Chris Martin. And
this is true.
And you know, now Martin is unsettled or whatnot. You know, to me, this is Matt Smith's big chance to prove himself. Whether or not Slavisa plays him and gives him that chance, we'll have to see. But from my perspective, Smith got a chance here, and he needs to grab it by the scruff of the neck.
Okay, very good. Max, over to you. What would you do for your starting 11?
Yeah, sure. I agree a lot with Guy. Almost everything with Guy in that one. Except the fullback's always a tough one. Just with embarrassment of riches back there, because Malone has been superb. And Fredericks last night was amazing. He was probably our best player, if I'd say, because he was our really only attacking outlet with the pace. But then again, Odoi was fantastic at Ipswich. So I'd probably have to go with Fredericks. He just edges it for me. And so I agree with the same midfield. And up top, that's going to be the big question mark. I'm fairly confident Martin will not play. So I think I'm going to go with Matt Smith, because he is that kind of target man we've been looking for. And he was doing well. Of course, he scored the goal. Winner against Newcastle way back in the first match.
He was doing pretty good. You know, I'm not Matt Smith's biggest fan, but I understand why you guys are saying play Matt Smith. Even for a small period of time, I'm talking about a few matches, I wouldn't be against playing Matt Smith. Matt Smith is not Chris Martin, but Matt Smith can hold up the ball. He can do certain things. He can do flick-ons. There are things he can do. So that's an option. So I understand where you guys are going on with that.
I would also argue Stephen Humphreys if I knew about his fitness.
I'm glad that you brought up his name. I was afraid to bring it up, Guy, because I don't think he'll do it, but I would be tempted to play him.
Know he got bought off in an away match against Aston Villa. And then I've been hearing from my friends who regularly watch the academy that he's in Manchester for New Year. So whether or not he would be back in London and ready to play, I wouldn't know.
Okay.
But I would argue to give him a place in the team.
I'm there with you. You know, again, I've watched a few of these under-23 matches. I understand it's under-23, but he's looked impressive. So I would not be against giving this kid a shot. I definitely would. Will Savica do it? I don't know, but I'm glad that you brought him up. I was thinking about bringing it up, Guy, but I'm like, you know, you guys are going to laugh at me if I bring up Stevie Humphries. But you know what? I don't think it's such a crazy idea to play him at some point. I'm not saying start him.
He did well in those last 5 minutes against Derby.
I thought he played pretty good, yeah. What I saw in the highlights. All right, guys. Guess what? It's prediction time. Max, I'll start with you. Give me your prediction for the match on Monday.
I'm going to be optimistic here and say Fulham 2, Brighton 1.
Okay. Guy?
Yep. I'm trying not to be ahead of myself and say we'll get a clean sheet. But no, 2-1. 2-1. There we go.
Guys,
it's David Button. It's 2-1.
Okay. Okay. Just so you guys know, seriously, I wrote down 2-1 for Fulham, so I'm going to say 2-1, and just so I don't upset co-host David Helly, I'm not going to say who the goal scorer is. He doesn't like when I do that, so I'm not going to do that today. Give him a Happy New Year present. I'm not going to say
double. That's me. I take with two. That's
okay.
Me, at least.
Okay. I'll leave it there. Guys, great show. Fantastic show. You guys were excellent. I cannot say enough good things about the job the two of you did, and also thank you for listening while I did the interview with Tom Moore, which I found very interesting. Max, I'll go to you. Final thoughts before we go, my friend.
Final thoughts. You know, just when after the Ipswich match, after Boxing Day, things were looking the best in years for Fulham. You know, reality has to bite us back and bring us back down to earth. You know, it's always going to be Fulham. It's not always going to be easy, but if we can ride out this tough little bump in the road, I think we'll be fine. And looking forward to 2017 with Fulham back in the Premier League.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Great, great final thought. How about you, Guy? What's your final thought?
All right, few things. First, I guess, like, I was thinking about it on the coach. Maybe this abandonment will make our goals easier to see. Because if we know how our opponents are doing around us, and we've got a game in hand against Reading, it should be clearer of the points total we need. At least that's what I was
thinking
about, like, briefly on the coach home.
A game in hand. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Next thing, you know, there was a team so much worse off than us yesterday. Spare a thought for Corinthian Casuals, who had a game away to Guernsey yesterday. At 4:30 in the afternoon, their flight was delayed until 6 p.m. At 5:20, their flight was delayed until 7. And after that, they were looking for a 9:15 kickoff.
Wow.
And then at 8:35, the match was postponed. Just think of all of those fans and teams waiting in the airport, waiting to get to Guernsey away. You know, an away day, Guernsey. Just a tiny island off of England. You know, anything to get my mind off of the frustration of yesterday. But no, and also spare a thought for Max. You know, he's here in England, but he can't get to the cottage. It's a shame. I'd buy you a program or whatever, but I don't know. Yeah.
I'd love a program.
Why not? Get in touch, mate. Add me on Facebook.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, why not? Okay, yeah, you do.
You guys have to get in touch. You guys, guys need to get in touch. Definitely need to get in touch. Guys, I'm going to finish off with my final thoughts. And basically, it just is to say thank you to all the listeners, all the Fulham supporters around the world. Thank you for listening to Cottage Talk. It's been a great year of doing Cottage Talk, and we're just at the end. So I want to wish everyone, Max, Guy, all the co-hosts, all the Fulham supporters around the world, Happy New Year. So my final thought is basically just to wish everyone Happy New Year. All right, guys. Great show, as I said. I want to thank our guest. We had a guest, and that was Tom Moore from Get West London for joining us at the beginning of the show. Thank you, Tom, for joining us and giving us all that information, having a very interesting discussion. And then, of course, thank you to my co-host. But it is time to go. For Max and Guy, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.